Hi, welcome to Forever Paranormal with Dr. Bill and Deb. The term paranormal refers to phenomena and experiences that are beyond the scope of normal scientific understanding and cannot be easily explained through traditional scientific principles. These phenomena often challenge conventional beliefs and are associated with the supernatural, metaphysical, or unexplained aspects of reality. As with any field of inquiry, it is essential to approach the paranormal with an open but critical mind, relying on empirical evidence and logical reasoning to draw conclusions. It's a topic that continues to intrigue and challenge both believers and skeptics alike, and if we can connect a paranormal element to it, we'll talk about it. You'll be surprised by what all can be connected to the paranormal. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and share the show, since it would not be possible without you, our listeners. And as a public service, we would like to let everyone know that you are truly never alone, even if you think you are. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is 988. Please just reach out. Well, hello there, and welcome to this week's episode, where we are going to discuss the 1994 Lake Michigan area UFO flap UFO sightings, which is kind of cool. But hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. So what kind of exciting stuff do you have for us this week?
Sure. I'd like to take a look at March's holidays. Some we all know and some are head scratchers.
Okay.
March is full of holidays, so real quick, on March 8th, we have International Women's Day.
Which has just passed.
Bringing attention to significant progress made towards women's rights and the ongoing struggles for equality. March 10th is the start of Daylight Savings Time and the start of Ramadan. Of course, March 15th is the Ides of March. The 17th, St. Patrick's Day, and March 19th is the spring equinox.
Yay, spring.
Yep. Palm Sunday is March 24th, and Easter's on the 29th.
So we have an early Easter this year, huh?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Interestingly, March 29th through the 31st is known as the borrowing days.
Huh?
Yeah. In Scottish lore, the notion is that because the weather at the end of the month tends to be stormy, March borrowed 3 days from April. I don't know.
Okay. There's 30 days in April, so I can see him borrowing a day. Anyhow, okay.
Yeah. Now, here are some not so well-known holidays. The third is, what if cats and dogs had opposable thumbs day? For all you pet owners out there.
Okay.
The 11th is International Fanny Pack Day, and honestly, I didn't know they still existed.
They still have fanny packs.
I know.
Pretty heavy in Europe yet, I think.
Oh, okay. The 13th is National Earmuff Day.
Wait a minute. Is that like the kind you tell your kids to put on when you're going to swear, or is that the ones you wear in the wintertime?
I'm guessing the winter ones.
Okay.
Yeah. The 16th is National Panda Day. Love them.
Okay.
Also on the 16th, it is Absolutely Incredible Kid Day. Love that too.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. The 23rd is World Meteorological Day. That's a mouthful. And lastly, March 31st is World Backup Day, which is a day to prepare against data loss and theft.
Okay, but I thought World Meteorological Day was February 2nd. When Punxsutawney Phil, who is better than the ground than the meteorologist, gives his forecast.
And that is why he gets his own day.
Oh, okay. All right. So thank you for that. That was really cool.
Sure.
But I think we probably ought to move on now.
Yes.
Okay. Well, March 8th isn't only International Women's Day. 30 years ago, on Tuesday, March 8th, 1994, started a three-day event of UFO sightings over Michigan. The vast majority of these sightings were on March 8th, and many times referred to as either the Muskegon UFO incident or the Holland UFO incident. These sightings had over 300 eyewitnesses, including law enforcement officers, National Weather Service radar reports, and airline pilot reports, but yet gained little to no press coverage out of the local area and was mostly forgotten about. Well, that is until the Netflix series Unsolved Mysteries picked it up in Episode 2 of Volume 3. My speculation for the minimal coverage of this amazing incident received is due to not having any legible photos or videos of the sightings. But you have to remember that cell phones weren't that popular or great at that time, and many people were still using hard landlines to communicate.
Even in the 90s, you would be labeled as crazy if you were to speak about strange lights, let alone UFOs, so these people must have been in fear to have reported anything.
I agree, and you're going to find out just how many people were in fear. So let's go ahead and get into the heart of what transpired that infamous and spooky night of March 8, 1994. According to the Chicago Tribune, there were over 300 witnesses across 42 counties in Michigan who reported seeing the UFOs. There were more than 300 calls made to 911 that evening, with residents reporting strange and unnatural lights along the eastern shore of Lake Michigan. There are a few key people related to this story that I want to mention. The first is one of the eyewitnesses by the name of Cindy Pravda, who is probably most famous for her 9/11 call, where she stated, "I got UFOs in my backyard." Another is Holland Police Officer Jack Veltman and National Weather Service meteorologist Jack Bushong and Mike Walsh, an attorney who was at that time an investigative reporter for the Muskegon Chronicle. Not being able to get many answers from anyone, Mr. Walsh filed a Freedom of Information application to obtain both the 911 tapes and the communications between 911 operators and Officer Veltman's conversations with National Weather Service's Jack Bushong.
Are there any military bases in the area?
Yes, there are. And, of course, they all claim that they heard nothing, knew nothing, seen nothing.
So they weren't involved in the investigation?
No, not at all, according to their records. But conspiracy theorists all feel that, yes, the government has all this information. And it was actually a Project Blue Book type of investigation that was hush-hush. So we'll get into a little more of the government's part of this as we go. Pravda was one of the hundreds of people who saw the collection of 5 or 6 glowing orbs above Lake Michigan. In an interview more than 2 decades after the event, she still remembered it clearly. "I watched them for half an hour," she said, "where I'm facing them. The one on the far left moved off. It moved to the highway and then came back in the same position. The one to the right was gone in a blink of an eye, and then eventually everything disappeared quickly." Well, folks, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, so let's start at the beginning as Mike Walsh reported it originally. It all began around 9:30 p.m. on the night of March 8, 1994, when police dispatches in Ottawa County began being inundated by calls from people who were seeing this inexplicable phenomenon involving multicolored lights. The lights were described as looking like Christmas lights by some and moving erratically and at high speeds by others. They were seen by around 300 people along the lakeshore from Holland to Muskegon. They appeared to be attached to solid objects, flying erratically, sometimes in triangular formation, other times in clusters. Let's listen to a couple of the 911 calls here.
911, you guys busy?
A little bit.
I call that. It's not really an emergency. We just called about the UFOs. They're out there. Same airplanes.
Yeah, we've got a car on the way over there. Let's see, right now.
as a group and they kind of split, I bet some kind of hot air balloon or helium balloon with lights on them.
Okay.
The main airplanes.
Yeah, we've got a car on the way. He was coming from the downtown area, so he's...
They're kind of hanging in the general area. It's like maybe the wind might have broken them apart like they would be balloons, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, but, so we got a call from Stratford Way, and that's where he's heading first, and then he's going to head over to yours.
Okay, yeah, we, they're dead south of us now.
South of you?
Yeah, we're on 16th Country Club.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, bye.
Yeah, bye.
Central Dispatch?
Yeah, this is a non-emergency, so feel free to cut me off if something comes in. And I feel kind of silly calling, but my son insisted that I call. Is there any Air Force airplanes or helicopters flying around in Elgin or Ottawa County tonight?
I don't know. We've had reports about Stratford Way in that area of lights, and they're checking it out.
Stratford Way?
Yep.
Now, where would that be? We're right on Ottagon on the county line.
Yeah, it's down in that area.
Right
it is? By Holland City.
Pardon?
Right down. It's by Holland City.
Okay, because he saw them heading southeast of the county line of Ottawa and Allegan, probably right on the Kent County line, I would imagine.
Okay, yeah, we've got them checking it out. They say it's something to do with radio towers down in the area.
It has something to do with what?
Radio towers down in the area.
They were in the air.
Why don't you tell them what you saw?
Okay, I was at a real high hill. Right on the county line there, and it was like at a 45 degree angle to the ground.
Uh-huh.
There's like probably four or five lights, and they were all flashing right in a row from the top all the way down to the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And it was sitting there for a while, and then it leveled off, and then it moved southeast. It was up in the air quite a bit.
Okay, yeah, we got an officer down the area checking on it right now.
Okay.
But okay.
It took off real fast.
Okay, yeah, we'll let him know.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
You know, the calls are interesting because one of the callers tries to make it off as hot air balloons, and another one's like, it's not hot air balloons or radio towers. So there was a lot more calls come in, and I just wanted to put a couple of those in so you can get an idea of the types of calls that were coming. You know, because they were observed by people on the ground, including multiple police officers, as well as being tracked simultaneously in real time by the NOAA through the National Weather Service station in Muskegon. In addition, several airplane pilots who also observed the lights when they were en route to Chicago. After receiving calls from approximately 60 people and not knowing what to make of all this, Ottawa County Dispatch contacted the National Weather Service station in Muskegon to see if they were picking up anything on radar. Let's go ahead and listen to a little bit of the conversation between Ottawa County Dispatch and National Weather Radar Service meteorologist Jack Bushong.
Weather Service, Muskegon.
Hi, Muskegon. This is Ottawa County 911 calling.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. Have access to a radar there, don't you?
Yes, we do.
You do. You getting anything weird down in the southern Ottawa County area?
Anything weird? Hold on for a second.
Okay. Okay, the reason I ask is we're getting a whole bunch of calls of some strange lights in the southern Ottawa, northern Allegan County, right near Holland City area.
Strange light?
Yeah. Such as we've had about 60 UFO calls.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. So I'm sitting here going, no, come on. There's got to be something more to this.
Yeah. Well, I have to call a UFO reporting center then about this.
This is just, you know, we've had a couple of them, and we've got an officer out there right now.
It was at this point that Bushong, who was also an aviation buff, took manual control of the radar and started looking up and down the Lake Michigan coastline. He was used to tracking planes with the radar, as it was one of the ways he would practice finding anomalies like you would find inside storms and thunderstorms. Weather radar does not work the same way as the radar used to track planes. Planes have transponders, and the FAA radar is tracking the transponder, while weather radar is looking from ground on up to 80,000 feet, looking for different things in a vertical formation. Eventually, after taking manual control of the radar, he registered a blip tracked at 100 miles per hour. He then watched as it ascended tens of thousands of feet straight into the air in seconds. Let's listen to a bit of this conversation. Then, at about 30 or 40,000 feet in the air, Bushong saw a triangle form. Three separate objects with a horizontal distance of 20 miles from one to the next. The shapes proceeded to zip up and down, reaching heights up to 60,000 feet, disqualifying any theory that ground interference could have caused the radar readings. They were just moving so fast, and two more started coming into play there. I really had little time to describe where they were before they had moved and jumped again, Bushong said. At one point in the call, Bushong confirmed that he saw three and sometimes four blips on the radar, and they weren't planes. Planes, he said, explained, show as pinpoints on a scope. These were the size of half a thumbnail. They were from 5 to 12,000 feet at times, moving all over the place. Three were moving towards Chicago. I never saw anything like it before, not even when I'm doing severe weather. According to his calculations, Bushong stated that the crafts would be traveling over 72,000 miles per hour when they made the jumps. I guess that explains why they were gone in a blink of an eye, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one thing I find interesting is the fact that in the call, Bushong clearly states that the computer recorded what was being seen on the screens, but when the tapes were released under the Freedom of Information Act, they claimed there were no pictures or video of any type involving the radar.
Wouldn't that imply that information was redacted?
No, it's not redacted because the information was never put out. They just acted like it didn't exist. And completely flat out said it didn't exist. The tapes, everyone knows existed because they're there. But the government held that information back and wouldn't let it be sent out. For some reason, that's part of the conspiracy. Another interesting tidbit would be if there were maybe some type of government cover-up going on here. I, for one, would have to say hell yeah on that. On Friday, March 11th, 1994, just 3 days after the main incident, Leo Grenier, who was in charge of the National Weather Service of Muskegon, stated to the Lansing State Journal, quote, radar turned up a fast-moving phenomenon over Lake Michigan, and he notified the National UFO Reporting Center. But then, amazingly, a year later, Grenier was reported in the Chicago Tribune as quoted and was quoted as saying, I don't believe for a minute that it was any kind of alien structure. Yeah, we have a national government employee taking a statement back. That sounds normal. Okay. I also want to note here that in the early reporting of this incident, that tower personnel at the Muskegon County Airport originally stated they saw blips on their radar, but later retracted it. I'm guessing that's because of some kind of law or something where they are not to discuss anything that occurs inside the tower or anything that's seen inside the tower outside of it with any press or public at all. I'm not sure of the exact date, but it wasn't long after this happened that the National Weather Service closed the Muskegon office and everyone but Jack Bushong was transferred within the state of Michigan. Jack Bushong was transferred to Atlanta and they told him he needed to leave Michigan. That's pretty harsh, I think. A fun little fact is Michigan is always in the top 10 states in the country for UFO sightings. Even President Gerald Ford saw a UFO in Michigan and pushed for the first ever congressional hearing on UFOs in 1970 when he was a member of Congress. But just think, it only took them another 5 decades to have another one that they just had in the summer of 2023. This is still an active case for the Michigan chapter of MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network and is a worldwide organization. But what do you think, Deb? Were over 300 eyewitnesses, a cop, or a few cops, and a radar operator all hallucinating at the same time? And secondly, do you think aliens are real or still completely skeptical?
For me personally, I always need undisputable proof before jumping on any bandwagon. So since all that serves as proof is eyewitness accounts and statements about radar and recordings that are no longer available, I guess you're going to have to call me a skeptic.
Okay, fair enough. So what about the extraterrestrials? You need undisputable proof on that too?
Yes.
All right, so I can understand that. I'm still on the fence for extraterrestrials, but I do want to say that a lot of people in the UFO world, or non-UFO world, I should say, in non-paranormal world, want to discount eyewitness accounts and eyewitness testimony on anything to do with the paranormal, which I don't agree with at all. Because you put somebody on trial for murder, and you're going to sentence them to life or take their life for murder, and the best testimony they have in any court in this country is eyewitness testimony. So I don't understand the double standards. I guess the general public just thinks experiencers are kind of off, I guess. Something like that. All right, but what about you folks? Tell us your thoughts on the matter, either on Facebook, Instagram, or just send us an email at admin@foreverparanormal.com. And with that, thanks for listening, and until next time when we discuss another tale yet to be told. Thank you for listening, and remember to like and share the show. We would also appreciate a 5-star rating wherever possible to help new listeners find the show. We welcome all questions or comments you may have about this or any other episode, and our contact information can be found in the show notes of this episode. You can also follow us at foreverparanormal.com. And if you'd like to support us, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/foreverparanormal. The links to these are also in the show notes of this episode.